The EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider on this lovely May weekend. It's been a busy news week, and this coming weekend, we have Pope Francis's trip to Verona on Saturday the 18th, and then Mass on Pentecost Sunday, May 19th. So, no rest for the weary. In place of the interview segment, I have prepared a special on a much-loved, very celebrated Italian shrine. We will actually take a mini-pilgrimage to Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii, a half hour south of Naples, which has a beautiful and even touching story. It's a shrine that has a special place in my heart. Now, May, of course, is the month of Mary and the month of the Rosary, and thus a special time for such a wonderful story. My very first encounter in 1997 with a prelate of this beloved Marian shrine is at the end of this story, a surprising and unexpected encounter that will help you understand why I have a special place in my heart. And now to the news highlights of the week. There was so much news that some of the summaries must be briefer than usual. Sunday, May 12th. After reflecting on the day's gospel and praying the Regina Caeli, Pope Francis marked the 58th World Day of Social Communications by reminding everyone, in a world increasingly permeated by artificial intelligence, to never lose sight of the wisdom of the heart. Speaking on Ascension Sunday, he said, "Only by recuperating a wisdom of the heart can we interpret the demands of our time and rediscover the path to full human communications." And by the way, he had lovely words for mothers around the world, because most of the world was celebrating Mother's Day. He also entrusted all mothers to our maternal heavenly mother, and that is to say Mary. Also Sunday, Pope Francis telephoned the Archbishop of flood-stricken Porto Alegre in Brazil to express his solidarity and closeness to those affected by the disaster in the state of Rio Grande do Sul, where at least 137 people have died and over 600,000 are displaced. Monday, May 13th, the feast, of course, of Our Lady of Fatima, Pope Francis met with the abbot, monks, and collaborators of the Abbey of Monte Vergine on the occasion of the 900th anniversary of the abbey's foundation. He encouraged the community to make themselves a gift to God and to be a gift of God to others. The abbey, located 4,170 feet above sea level, was founded in 1124 by the hermit St. William of Vercelli. Pope Francis reminded the religious of the origin of their monastery, in which, he said, there were no miracles or extraordinary events, but the care of a shepherd, the Bishop of Avellino, who wanted to build a church in that elevated place and to gather a small number of people in the service of God, to make it a center of prayer, evangelization, and charity. Also Monday, meeting with the head of the Syro-Malabar Catholic Church, which has been divided for a number of years by a fierce liturgical dispute, Pope Francis emphasized the importance of obedience to ecclesiastical authorities. Referring to the ongoing controversy, he said, quote, "Guarding unity is not a pious exhortation, but a duty. Showing a grave lack of respect for the Blessed Sacrament by arguing about the details of how to celebrate the sacrament, the pinnacle of Jesus' presence among us, is incompatible with the Christian faith." Also Monday, Pope Francis received in audience some 200 students and teachers of the Vatican School of Paleography, Diplomatic and Archival Studies, and the Vatican School of Library Sciences, as they celebrate their 140th and 90th anniversaries of foundation, respectively. He expressed his gratitude and underscored the importance of their work of forming people who, quote, "do accurate research in all circumstances to reach the truth." Tuesday, May 14th, the Vatican published Pope Francis's reply to a letter that children being cared for at an Italian hospital sent him when he had been experiencing health issues. He offered them his heartfelt thanks for their kind words and good wishes, imploring the Blessed Mother to watch over them, and urging them to find a ray of light in the darkness of illness. Also Tuesday, in his message for the Fourth World Day for Grandparents and the Elderly, which will take place July 28, 2024, the Holy Father recognized the situation of many elderly people today, and he assured them, God never abandons his children, never. He called the elderly the firm foundation on which new stones can rest in order to join in erecting a spiritual edifice. And he explained that the abandonment of the elderly is not by chance or inevitable, but the fruit of decisions, political, economic, social, and personal, that fail to acknowledge the infinite dignity of each person. He said the passage from us to me is one of the most evident signs of our times. Tuesday afternoon, Pope Francis met some 70 priests from the Diocese of Rome who have been ordained 40 or more years. They had a closed-door conversation at a Roman parish near the Vatican, after which the Pope greeted a group of primary school children and students attending catechism classes there. Wednesday, May 15th. At the weekly general audience in St. Peter's Square, the Pope reflected on the theological virtue of charity, quoting St. Paul, who said, "So faith, hope, and love abide, these three, but the greatest of these is love." Like every human person, said Francis, Christians are capable of all the forms of love in the world, romantic love, love of friends, country, humanity. But there is a greater love which comes from God and is directed towards God and enables us to love God and to love our neighbor as God does. This is the virtue of charity, which enables us not only to love our friends and family, but to love even those who are difficult to love. Before the audience, Pope Francis blessed the Voice of the Unborn Bell, a bell made in Poland that will be taken to Kazakhstan and serve as a reminder of the importance of protecting human life from conception to natural death. The Pope blessed the bell and rang it with two Polish children. Now, this initiative was promoted by the Yes to Life Foundation of the Immaculate Conception of the Blessed Virgin Mary, based in Poland. Thursday, May 16th. Pope Francis addressed participants in a Vatican summit on the climate crisis, and he encouraged the international community to leverage the regenerative power of nature to move toward climate resilience. The Pontifical Academies of Science and Social Sciences are hosting a 3-day summit to explore the theme from climate crisis to climate resilience. In his address, the Pope lamented the worsening data regarding climate change, calling for urgent action to protect people and nature. Also Thursday, Pope Francis welcomed the Director General and the delegation from the Theological College of Athens, and he thanked them for 2 decades of cooperation between the Apostoliki Diakonia of the Church of Greece and the Catholic Community for Cultural Collaboration of the Dicastery for Promoting Christian Unity. Also Thursday, Pope Francis sent a message of greeting and encouragement to participants in the International Conference on Sports and Spirituality, organized and promoted by the Vatican Dicastery for Culture and the French Embassy to the Holy See within the framework of the 2024 Olympic Games in Paris. Francis said, "The discipline and temperance of athletes, as well as healthy competition, have often been valued as metaphors for virtuous Christian life. Even today, this metaphor can be effective for all those who, in some way, desire and strive to please God and to be his friend." Friday, May 17th. During a meeting in the Vatican Friday morning with participants of the plenary meeting of the Pontifical Commission Sacred Archaeology, Pope Francis acknowledged that the Christian catacombs will naturally be one of the most significant destinations for pilgrims during the 2025 Jubilee year, whose theme is hope. In the catacombs, he said, everything speaks of hope, of life beyond death, of deliverance from dangers, and death by God's work. He said the catacombs are cemeteries, which means dormitories, that testify to the Christian's expectation, the hope in the resurrection of Christ and the resurrection of the flesh. Also Friday, the much-anticipated document from the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith detailing new norms regarding cases of reported supernatural phenomena was released. As a rule, neither the local bishop nor the Holy See will declare these phenomena are of supernatural origin, but will only authorize and promote devotion and pilgrimages. The norms come into force Sunday, May 19th, the Feast of Pentecost. The document is preceded by a detailed presentation by Cardinal Victor Manuel Fernandez, prefect of the Dicastery, followed by an introduction and 6 possible conclusions. The procedure allows for faster decisions while respecting popular devotion. As a rule, the Church's authority will no longer be engaged to officially define the supernatural nature of a phenomenon, a process that can require large amounts of time to thoroughly study an event. Wow, what a week! Now, stay right here for my special on the Shrine of Our Lady of the Rosary in Pompeii, Italy.
This is Bishop William Walterscheid, Auxiliary Bishop in the Diocese of Pittsburgh. What are the benefits of confessing our sins? First of all, we receive forgiveness because in confession, we come to Jesus himself. Another benefit of confessing our sins is receiving the healing that Jesus wants us to have. What is the benefit of confessing our sins? To know to whom we belong, Jesus, the merciful Savior.
As the largest religious media network in the world, EWTN has an important role in educating others about our Catholic faith and spreading the good news of salvation. We invite you to explore our numerous pages of historical faith documents, prayers, teachings, and other current issues in Catholicism today. Visit EWTN.com and click Catholicism. EWTN is the global Catholic network.
This is a Pro-Life Minute with doctors Stephen and Gracie Christie.
Steve, here's a really ugly accusation that's leveled at us all the time. You pro-lifers only care about babies while they're inside the uterus. Once they're born, you don't care for the poor and needy.
And what I always say is, what makes you think that pro-life advocates care less for the needy than pro-choicers? Did you know that pro-lifers give a greater percentage of their income and volunteer more of their time to the needy than those who identify as pro-choice? Now, you might believe that progressive social policies are better for the poor than conservative policies, and that's a legitimate debate to have. But it's both arrogant and inaccurate to simply claim that pro-choicers who donate less of their time and less of their money to the poor somehow care more for the poor than do the pro-life community.
Adoption rates also refute this falsehood. Pro-lifers are more than twice as likely to adopt as pro-choicers, again proving that pro-life movement is pro-life for all children. So claiming that pro-life advocates don't care about babies after they're born is pure nonsense.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider and to another special I've prepared on a much-loved, very celebrated Italian shrine. We will actually take a mini pilgrimage to Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii, a half hour south of Naples, which has a beautiful and even touching story. It's a shrine that has a special place in my heart. My very first encounter in 1997 with a prelate of this beloved Marian shrine is at the end of this story. It's a surprising and unexpected encounter that will help you understand why I have a special place in my heart and in my memories for the late Archbishop Francesco Saverio Toppi. In 2015, I was back on yet another visit. An acquaintance of mine from those days that we both worked in the Roman Curia, Archbishop Tommaso Caputo, the prelate of this beloved Marian shrine, had celebrated the 11 a.m. Mass, which I had attended, and I was blessed to have a chance to speak with him in the sacristy before Mass with the help of a volunteer Dame of Malta, Christiana. Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii is also beloved by popes. Pope St. John Paul II visited Pompeii on October 21, 1979, during a visit to Naples, and he returned there on October 7, 2003, for the conclusion of the Year of the Rosary. Pope Benedict XVI presented his 6th Golden Rose to Our Lady at the Shrine of Pompeii during the month dedicated to the Rosary on October 19, 2008. And Pope Francis visited this Marian shrine on March 21, 2015. I had visited just before his trip to the shrine. After spending several minutes in quiet prayer before the famous image of Our Lady of the Rosary, The Pope greeted the faithful, saying, "Thank you. Thank you so much for this warm welcome. We prayed to Our Lady so that she might bless us all, you, me, and the whole world. We need Our Lady to watch over us. And pray for me, don't forget. Now I invite you all to recite a Hail Mary to Our Lady, and then I will give you my blessing." Pope Francis has often spoken of his love for the Virgin Mary and the importance of Marian shrines. Archbishop Caputo described Pope Francis' visit to Pompeii as an event of extraordinary ecclesial importance. And Our Lady of the Rosary had a special place in Francis's heart in the pandemic year of 2020. During the May 6th Wednesday General Audience, in greetings to Italian language faithful listening into the audience as it was live streamed from the Papal Library of the Apostolic Palace, Pope Francis reminded them that 2 days later, on May 8th, an intense prayer of petition to Our Lady of the Rosary will be raised at the Shrine of Pompeii. "I urge everyone to unite themselves spiritually to this popular act of faith and devotion, so that through the intercession of the Blessed Virgin, the Lord may grant mercy and peace to the Church and to the whole world." In fact, twice each year, on May 8th and again on the first Sunday of October, solemn prayers of petition are offered at the Marian Shrine of Pompeii for the needs of the whole world. Now I'm going to start the story of the shrine with a quote from the man who founded Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii. Quote, "With the boldness of desperation, I lifted my face and hands to the Heavenly Virgin and cried, 'If it be true that you promised St. Dominic that whoever spreads the rosary will be saved, I will be saved, because I will not leave Pompeii until I have spread your rosary.'" Those are the words of Blessed Bartolo Longo, said in Pompeii, Italy, in October 1872. Now, let's go back a bit in time for the story of Blessed Bartolo and the Shrine of Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii. At 1 p.m. on August 24th, 79 B.C., Mount Vesuvius rumbled, roared, and then erupted, heaving its molten insides onto the populace of Pompeii and burying the ancient city. What remained was only a ghostly silence of a once-flourishing center. The new Pompeii would arise 1,796 years later. Called the Miracle City by its inhabitants, Pompeii as we know it today is the result of that promise made by Bartolo Longo, a lawyer and devout layman, a promise that became a reality in 1875 when work began on the construction of the church dedicated to Our Lady of the Rosary. The church and the buildings housing the charitable works associated with it eventually led to the birth of the city, the new Pompeii. Bartolo Longo was born in 1841 near Brindisi on Italy's Adriatic coast. Those who knew him as a young man described him as cordial, easygoing, of a lively intelligence, and devoted to the church. However, his university years were to be troubled ones, as anti-clerical sentiments were running strong in newly unified Italy. Prodded by anti-church liberals, Bartolo tested the waters, if you will, of Spiritism, and he went through a crisis in his faith. Aided by two good friends, Professor Vincenzo Pepe and the learned Dominican Father Alberto Radente, he not only rediscovered his faith, but renounced his legal career and devoted himself to works of charity and religious studies. Providence brought Bartolo Longo to the little town of Pompeii, a half hour south of Naples, in 1872, where a widow and the mother of five, the Countess Mariana de Fusco, asked him to administer her property. Struck by the human and religious poverty of the peasants of the area, Bartolo anguished over how he could help them better their lives. Following a divine inspiration, he decided to devote himself to teaching the catechism and spreading devotion to the rosary, remembering Father Radente's words, "If you are looking for salvation, propagate the rosary. It is the promise of Mary. He who propagates the rosary shall be saved." For 3 years, Bartolo Longo organized yearly festivals in the fall to bring the people together for catechesis and to pray the rosary. This could be best achieved, he felt, if the people had a proper church with an image of Our Lady of the Rosary as the focal point. Thus, in 1875, he began searching the stores of Naples, hoping to have one in time for that year's concluding ceremonies on November 13th. The ever-faithful and supportive Father Rodente recalled that years earlier he had bought such an image, which he had entrusted to Sister Maria Concetta of the Conservatory of the Rosary at Porta Medina. Bartolo hurried to Porta Medina, asked for the painting, and was horrified when he saw how ugly it was and how much in need of repair. He would later write, "Dear me, I felt a tightening around my heart as soon as I set eyes on it." When Countess de Fusco saw the painting of the Virgin with the child Jesus handing rosaries to St. Dominic and St. Rose of Lima, she said, "It seems to have been made specifically to discourage devotion." To make matters worse, the size of the painting precluded Bartolo taking it to Pompeii on the train. The only other possible form of transportation was through a wagoneer who weekly transported a load of manure to Pompeii. So the wagon it was to be. The painting was touched up for the November 13th ceremony and has since been restored three times, during which St. Rose was changed to St. Catherine of Siena. Today, the painting hangs above the main altar of the Basilica, beckoning to several million pilgrims annually as strongly as it once repulsed Bartolo Longo and his loyal supporters. By 1855, some 940 cures and miracles were ascribed to Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii. The number well exceeds that today, as witnessed by the countless ex-votos lining the walls of the shrine and adjacent buildings. On my first visit, as I lingered to study several hundred of the votive offerings, the ex-voto, a catechesis to Mary's intercession, I realized that here was the true history of the shrine. A single man's love for the rosary, transmitted to generations of faithful. He loved, they believed, and together they built what is today one of the preeminent Marian shrines in the world. Each year on May 8th and on the first Sunday of October, thousands of faithful gather at the shrine for the Feast of the Supplication, to petition favors, and to offer thanksgiving for favors received. In fact, most if not all of the plaques of thanksgiving that line the walls and halls and corridors of this shrine have the letters PGR on them, Per Grazie Ricevute, for favors received, and this is what I referred to earlier as ex votos. The neoclassical pontifical shrine and basilica of Our Lady of the Rosary, in all of its frescoed marble splendor, was dedicated in 1891. 15 years after Bartolo began to collect pennies from the peasants to build this citadel to Mary. But our devoted lawyer felt that this monument would be incomplete if works of charity were not part of it, and so, over the years, until his death in 1926, Bartolo founded homes for orphan girls, for the sons of prisoners, and later orphaned boys. Today, this monumental complex, the pulsating heart of the new Pompeii, includes administrative offices, a chapel for confessions, a school, a home for elderly women, and the offices of the monthly publication, The Rosary and the New Pompeii. It began in 1884. It also houses the living quarters and offices of the prelate of Pompeii and the shrine director. On my first visit to the shrine a number of years ago, I had a long conversation with the then director, Monsignor Pietro Gaggiano, who was also my guide to the shrine. It was a Sunday morning, and after Mass, we began our tour. At the end of our visit, Monsignor Gaggiano left his office for a minute, and when he came back, he asked me if I had lunch plans. I said I had nothing special planned, probably just someplace near the shrine, and he said that Archbishop Francesco Tobi, the prelate of the shrine and territorial prelature, wanted to invite me for lunch. It was a great lunch with marvelous conversation. If I had 100 questions about the shrine, Archbishop Tobi had 200 questions about the Pope, the Vatican, the press office, and any interesting tidbits I could give him. After lunch, I had a really special treat when Monsignor and the Archbishop took me to one of the rooms that Pope John Paul had been to during his 1979 visit. Archbishop Tobi walked to an immense piece of furniture, opened at the top drawer, and took out a very large book, the Shrine's VIP guest book. He proudly opened it to John Paul's signature, and then he showed me a few more famous names, and then opened to a blank page and asked me to sign the book. I said, in no way did I feel worthy to be part of such an important volume. And he said, but we are all children of God. So my signature has now been immortalized in Pompeii. The devotion of this wonderful Capuchin Archbishop and Monsignor Gaggiano to the shrine in Bartolo Longo was palpable as they spoke reverently of his exemplary life and emphasized the fact it was a layperson who accomplished the, quote, miracle of Pompeii, who founded the still flourishing works of charity, and who in 1897 founded the Dominican Sisters of the Holy Rosary of Pompeii. Both of them also pointed with pride to Pope John Paul's 1979 visit to the shrine and to the tomb of the man he would beatify the following year. In fact, Blessed Bartolo Longo is buried beneath the image he had wished. We spoke of miracles and of saints. I asked if it was harder today in a fast-paced secular world with temptations on every corner to become a saint. Archbishop Topi answered, "Every time has its trials and its temptations, and every time has its saints. We are conditioned by the times in which we live, and we adjust to meet those times and face up to those trials." Now a little postscriptum. On April 2, 2014, exactly 7 years to the day of his death, the cause for canonization for Archbishop Topi was opened. The current prelate of the Shrine of Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii, as I said earlier, Archbishop Tommaso Caputo, having asked the opinion of the other bishops of the Campania region, and having obtained the nulla osta, nothing's in the way, of the Congregation for the Causes of Saints, decreed the introduction of the cause. The request was put forth by Father Carlo Coloni, OFM Cap, Postulator General of the Cause of Beatification of Archbishop Topi. And another postscriptum. In April 2014, Monsignor Gaggiano, former administrator of the shrine, was named rector of the local seminary.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.